WOR is sending you, as a special public service, a man crying. For all of you. Because there are certain things in our society that will not allow men to cry out loud. And there are certain things in our society that compel women to be repelled by men who cry out. Hold it there. I don't need any of that. Yes, I do. Don't stop. Don't keep your eye on me. Hello, hello. Hello, we're here. Hello out there, all of you. I'm sorry, madam, but that was done purposely. I'm not going to try to chicken out. Tonight is one night I have set aside. Thursday nights from now until the first week in June, Thursday nights will be nights in which we will not chicken out one iota anywhere along the line, because as far as I'm concerned, it's not worth it anymore. And as far as I'm concerned, you know what you can do with your radio. Yeah. Go on. Do it. See what I care. See what it means to me. Jack Parr is gone. And don't worry, you'll be gone too one day. So don't laugh. Don't feel so superior. You know, I have a friend, though. I'll tell you something that might be of some interest to you, for those of you who are out there in listener land. things out there in listener land, huh? Hey, you old listener, you. How are you out there? Old radio land. Hey, George, old TV land out there. I saw this big sign the other day, and it was over a movie house, and it said, why hesitate? Come on in. Happiness is so cheap. out there in old viewer land, how's happiness going, huh? And this is the cheapest form of all. You're not paying a red cent for this. I'm the cheapest one of all, you know? I mean, you know what that TV set costs to just keep going. You know, upkeep, the tubes, the horizontal voltage keeps going, the vertical hold, all that jazz. But none of that happens to me. Every night I'm here. Old Boffo. Old Hickey is here. Why don't you follow me, huh? How would you like to go wandering up and down the places I know? I'll show you some things written on walls that perhaps you haven't read recently. Well, a lot of nice things written on walls, you know. You'd be surprised some of the things that come out of those pieces of chalk, you know. Yeah, well, we're off to a good start, aren't we here? Well, is everything okay out there in listener land? Well, I'll tell you, everything here in studio land is just as air-conditioned as it always was. Just as hermetically sealed away from reality and all those bad things. And it's okay. I mean, we kind of like it, actually. And we've picked it, you know. Not really. I suppose it picked us, but we're here. I guess it's okay out there. Is the Grand Concourse still there? Hello, Darien. Darien. it's there. Hello there. How are you? It's good to be with you tonight. I certainly am pleased, and we'll get off to a flying start. There. Jack Parr is gone. I want you to understand it. He is gone. Please understand it. He will never return. Because I have a friend in the business who bought the Jack Parr image. 2 weeks before Parr went off the air, he bought the Parr image. Even if Parr could get back on, he won't be Parr, you see, because my friend owns the Parr image. Did you wonder why Steve Allen flopped when Steve Allen came back? Because he didn't own his image. He had to be another person. It didn't work. The original Steve Allen is owned by an agency over on 46th Street. And they also own Red Buttons, the image. Not Buttons, but Buttons has never been able to do it because he tried to do, you know? Who do you think bought Dagmar? Jerry Lester. Milton Berle. Up there in listener land. Hi. Hello, is Westport with us tonight? Hello, Westport. Hey, the officers are still here, Westport. You didn't get away from them. They're still here, and all them blotters are still on the desks. I'm here in New York. And I know, I just walked right up Madison Avenue, and I saw BBDNO. It's still there. It's waiting. It's not going to do you any good to drink. I mean, it's here. It's waiting. It doesn't matter. They're all watching the old movies. The old movies are on. Hey, I'm an old movie. Hey, you guys, I'm an old movie. Come on, I'm going to gallop. Watch, I'm galloping now. Hey! Oh, boy, I'll tell you, I'm going to get after them sheep herders. Hello there. Didn't go off so good, did it? Well, I could do your movie here if you want. If you want me to do an old movie, do you want a Charlie Chan movie? I'll have you all trapped in this room, see, and I'll walk back and forth. You wonder why I have invited you here. Huh? I could do that. And let me tell you another thing, too. There is one of you that's guilty. And you who are guilty know which one of you it is. And there's a lot of magic in electronics. I'm not kidding, you know. They're not jazzing around. One of the things about the magic of electronics is that them radios are looking at you. And they're soaking it up. Do you know we have right up here in Master Control, we got a great big graph that has all the reactions of all the people who are listening to us continually plotted? I can tell when you're guffing. Oh, really, I can tell when you're boffing it up. I can tell when you get up and go out, you know, without asking, you come back. I can tell. You're not fooling around with anything. This is magic electronics, let me tell you. Hi, listeners. Okay. You don't think this is the original Gene Shepard, do you? Listen, Shepard's trying to make it over. Oh, he's been fooling around for years on another station. Tried everything. The image is owned by somebody else. And I'm just here. How's your image? Do you still own it? Do you own your image, really? Cheers, huh? Well, you're pretty lucky. Pretty lucky. How would you like to do a little, just had an idea. How about some dominoes, huh? Hey, you know, one time I knew a friend of, I could go further than this. You realize that, hey, listen, got an idea. I guess it has to do with this big room where old Charlie is walking back and forth. I'll give you the brass figligy with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me who played the original Charlie Chan. You wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe it. Is Priscilla Lane with us tonight? Hello. Pris, how are you, baby? Like the other night, I'm sitting there in front of this TV set, and I'll tell you, I broke out in hives. All the way down to my belt line. It was awful. Just like that, instantly. Because you know who came on the screen? There's this chick named June Pricer. I must have been about 8 years old. I'll tell you what happened when I was 8 years old. It was the first time I ever had an embarrassing moment. You know, I fell madly in love with this June Pricer. Yes, June Pricer was her name. I guess her name still must be June Pricer. I don't know. But then again, I don't know whether she ever existed or not. You know, these things are very, very elusive. I mean, you wonder whether Jeffrey Lynn ever was just, maybe it was just a celluloid thing that moved back and forth there. Is there, or was there ever, really, was there ever a Jack Parr? Or was it all just one of those, all together now? Is everybody happy? Yeah, well, a little cheap guitar music there, Eddie. Oh, yeah, she's got it. She's ready. And there really aren't many of us who are ready. It's like the other day, I read about this guy down in Mexico, speaking of ready people. He sitting there in the jukebox joint there, and the jukebox is playing. It's playing rock and roll. And this guy gets up and starts to dance. I might as well read it to you right here. A guy starts to dance. Suddenly, His friend jumped up and shot him right between the shoulder blades. And they asked him why. He says he can't even dance good. Can you dance good? Do you figure if you learn how to dance good, or if you get rid of your skin troubles, you are going to grow up in stature and people are going to love you? Do you feel that if you lose weight, you are going to become suddenly scintillating and irresistible? That if you could learn how to talk good and smooth and easy and nice and clear and soft, that you would make all kinds of big dough and would be popular and happy? You know, by George, you're right. You have come to the right place. Tonight, friends. Pluck upon the lute strings of my heart. Play the ethereal, sentimental melodies, calling me, always calling me, to those ancient rocks of disaster and destruction. Ah, yes, but I am ready for thee. Ah, it's too late. Too late. In all the Eastern Hemisphere, you wouldn't find a knight, a peer, a viscount, earl or baronet, a marquis or duke, nor yet a prince or emperor or king or sultan, czar, or anything that could in family pride surpass J. Wentworth Bean of Boston, Mass. His family tree could far outscale the beanstalk in the fairy tale, and Joseph's coat would pale before the blazoned coat of arms he bore, the arms of his old ancestor, one Godfrey Bean, who crossed, you know, about 200 years ago. He had it stamped, engraved, embossed, without the least regard to cost, upon his house, upon his gate, upon his tablecloth, his plate, upon his locker, his knocker, his mat, his watch, on scarf pin, handkerchief, and screen, and cards. In short, J. Wentworth Bean contrived to have old Godfrey's crest on everything that he possessed. And lastly, when he died, his will proved to contain a codicil directing that a sum be spent to carve it on his monument. But if you think this ends the scene, you little know J. Wentworth Bean. To judge him by the common host is reckoning without his ghost. And it is something that befell his ghost I chiefly have to tell tonight. At midnight of the very day they laid J. Wentworth Bean away, no sooner had the clock gone round to 12 p.m. than from the ground arose a specter, lank and lean, with frigid air and haughty mien, none other than J. Wentworth Bean, unchanged in all except his pride, if anything, intensified. He looked about him with that air of supercilious despair that very stuck-up people wear at some society affair when no one in their set is there. Then, after brushing from his sleeves some bits of mold and clinging leaves, and lightly dusting off his shoe, the iron gate he floated through. Just looking back, the clock to note, as one who fears to miss a boat, 10 minutes later found him on the Ghost's Cunarder, Oregon. And 10 days later, by spook time, he heard the hour of midnight chime from out the door of Beanley Hall, and stood within the graveyard wall beside a stone, moss-grown and green, on which these simple words were seen: "In memory, Sir Godfrey Bean." The while he gazed in thought serene, a little ghost of humble mien, unkempt and crooked, bent and spare, accosted him with cringing air. Most noble sir, 'tis plain to see you're not of the likes of me. You are a spook of high degree." My good man, cried J. Wentworth B. Leave me. Leave me a little while, I pray. I've traveled very far today, and I desire to be alone with him who sleeps beneath this stone. I cannot rest until I have seen my ancestor, Sir Godfrey Bean.
Your ancestor? How can that be?
Exclaimed the little ghost.
When he, last of his line, was drowned at sea 200 years ago, this stone is to his memory alone. I, and only I, saw his end. As he, my master and my friend, leaned o'er the vessel's side one night, I pushed him. No, it was not right. I own that I was much to blame. I donned his clothes and took his name, took the name of Bean. Yes, I did it. I also took his gold, about 5,000 pounds all told, and so to Boston, Mass. I came to found a family and name, I who in former times had been Sir Godfrey's...
Wretch, what do you mean? Sir Godfrey's what? Gasp, Wentworth Bean.
Sir Godfrey's valet.
That same night, when the ghost steamer sailed, you might among the passengers have seen a ghost, a very abject mien, faded and shrunk, forlorn and frayed, the shadow of his former shade, who registered in steerage class, J.W. Bean of Boston, Mass. Now, gentle reader, do not try to guess the family which I disguise as Bean. Enough that they exist on Beacon Hill today, in sweet enjoyment of their claims. It's not well to mention names. Hi, old buddy. Don't worry, cut it out. I'm surrounded by nincompoops, boobs, and idiots. I will be undone by knaves before I am through. Children, small crawling things. Good evening, hiya, pal. Speaking of idiot knaves and small crawling things, this is WOR. AM and FM in New York. The Big Apple. Come, you are among friends. You know, you really are. How many times do I have to tell you we are all in this together? I mean, it's your knee. I know. I have a firm suspicion that one day when I arrive up there and that big official judge, and all the official people are always talking about, going to look down there and he's going to say, Shepherd, we are here to look at your case. We are here to judge you. Please stand up. And he will take that great book and start leaping through it. Oh, yes, yes, S-H-E. Oh, yes, here we are. Will you please stand, Mr. Shepherd? And I will pull myself up to my poor, pitiful height. I will pull in my poor, pitiful gut. Please, sir, before you judge me, I'd like to say one thing. I'll tell you, sir, I've got a bad knee. Please don't judge me so harshly. Sometimes you can say it, and other times you can't. And sometimes, don't you ever have the feeling that you want to take people, and you want to just sort of engulf them somehow, and say, "Look, it's all right. It really isn't all right, but it's all right. It's okay." Don't you ever have that feeling, especially when you? Not so much when you run into people or you are involved with people you know. But it's the people you don't know, and you know because you don't know them, you know them better than those you know. And for very good reasons. About 3 hours ago, I'm sitting in the H&H, and I had this moment. And it's a Baroque H&H I was in. You know, there are several types. There's the early New York World's Fair H&H, that type. And then there's the late 1930s movie H&H. And then there's another kind that I think that's even more interesting, and it's the Brass Baroque. This was an earlier Horn and Hardart art. And there's something about these places that make them even more H&H-ier than the H&Hs, the real ones. And I'm sitting there, and I'm eating a chicken pie, a pot pie. And they're good. You know, the first thing you do, you start with the juice, and you start in the middle. Don't push all that stuff in. It always makes me worry when guys are breaking it all in. They don't, you know, you start with the juice a little bit, see? Well, I'm down in this thing when this moment happened. It was just one of those strange things. There were two people came through the door, big revolving door, and I could not take my eyes off them. They were two women. And one of the women, and I don't wish to sound unkind, one of the women was in a funny way so ugly that she was beautiful. She was ugly the way a gargoyle is, that's carved, you know, on Notre Dame or an ancient Gothic cathedral somewhere. She has a strange kind of ugliness, but very, very ugly. And I looked, and I just thought, gee, what an unusual person. She's ugly. And yet, any man can tell the same thing that I'm going to tell you now, chicks. There is no such thing, really. This is not a cliche. There is no such thing, really, as a truly ugly woman to a man. Not really. Because she always remains what she is, which is a woman. And to a woman is a beautiful thing. In always, women hardly ever learn this. It takes them 100 years to learn it, and usually they're dead and don't even know it when they're gone. And they spend all their time trying to do things to make it so. But it's often even sadder when they do that. Because what they, the real, how can I say this? Men know what I'm saying. Women don't. My Fashionstieg is not exactly what you need. Elena Rubinstein, I would like to introduce to you my Fashionstieg. And now, it's not exactly what you need, baby. You see, this girl was beyond Fashionstieg, and she knew it. She must have known it at the age of 8. And because of that, she had attained a peculiar kind of beauty. That had she had no makeup whatsoever, because that would have been even more grotesque. I mean, you know, a gargoyle with painted claws is ridiculous. You know. With the polish there. and she sat there, and she walked through, and she was with a girl who was of another type. She was so plain that it made your teeth itch. You know that kind? With the strange kind of rubby, scruffy, red face that you can't tell whether she's been washing it too much since she was 3 or whether she has developed a permanent case of chapness. You know that kind of red, real red? And her hair was, it would look like it was pasted on. You know, it sort of stuck out all over. And she had very thick glasses. And they went through, in fact, both of them had very thick glasses. And they went through the H&H, and I was waiting for someone, so I just sat there, and I chewed on my thing, my old trusty chicken pie there, and I was working away at it, and my coffee had by now formed the scum on it, you know, that it gets when you make a mistake. You see, I'm a black coffee man by nature. And often when I'm in a hurry in the H&H, they have somehow turned off the black coffee spigot, and you have to take it with the stuff in it, you know? Either that or wait by that little window. Never tell you about the time I had the argument with the guy by the window there? And somehow he recognizes me for years after that? But I'm sitting there with my coffee, see? And I was the only guy at the table. And you guess where the two of them sat. That's right. One of them to my left and one directly across from me. And I felt good about it. I don't know why, but I felt very good, you know? And they sat there, and they were very excited. They were so excited that it was good to see. And the girl with the red face was talking to the fat girl, and they were talking about the ballet. And they were discussing with intimate detail their tiny triumphs about how they got tickets. It became evident to me that getting tickets was a very important thing, and to get a ticket was a victory in lives where there are very few victories. And they were talking, well, you see, one time when Fontaine was in, I did this, and they were talking, it was like novelists talking about good reviews. It was like actors that were talking about garlands that were thrown on the stage about them, and they were very excited. And they were going off to see the ballet. And they went on and on. And then they got up, they ate very fast, and by the way, it must have been 4 hours before the ballet. They were going to get in line, you see. And they ate like mad, and off they went into the revolving door. I sat there and I thought, it just sort of a thing was forming. And behind me to my left, there were two men. One was the kind of guy who, at the age of 14, was 6'7", and he weighed 340 pounds, and he was made out of pure tallow. You know? Yes, tallow. Candle wax to you, children. And he had this kind of big old friendly, ineffectual look. And he's sitting there, and his coat was 7 feet long. And he must have been, you know, just maybe 21 or 22. And he had very thick glasses. And he sat there, and he was talking to his friend. His friend looked like, well, sort of like, well, kind of like Stan Laurel, only not funny. You know? And they're both talking, and what do you think one says to the other? He says, well, I'll take Othello any day. And they got up, and they went out through the revolving door. And I suddenly thought, you know, the more trouble people have in their lives, the more they want gigantic things on the stage and grandeur. The more they want, the more they need. The more there's a crying out for Siegfried. Yes. Aida. Yes. Faustus. Goethe. The great, great things. Because you see, you can't sit in a movie if you're a big, fat high school kid that weighs 400 pounds and watch high school life being portrayed. That's too close to home, and you ain't there. It ain't your home. And so in the end, you watch them spin on stages. Tall, thin, gazelle-like girls and men who float forever in the air. And you listen to great soaring arias where men have bronze swords and women wear horns in their hair. Yes. And you sit down in the basement of Horn and Hardart, and you talk about how you got the tickets. How I waited in line 7 hours to see Tannhäuser. Yeah, I was the first one. I was the first one. Brasilia. Isn't that a beautiful name for a city? Brasilia. You know, one thing about going to Africa, they have the most beautiful names you ever heard in your life for cities. They don't name them like Newark. Or, you know, names like Pitcairn, Pennsylvania. You know, Beckley, West Virginia. beautiful names. Who wouldn't in this crowd be excited just by the mere thought of going to a town named Ibadan? Isn't that a beautiful name? Enigu. Enigu. Isn't that a fascinating name? Lagos. And Kano. And how about the name, a simple name that just hangs in the air like a kind of piece of sculpture? Jos. J-O-S. Jos. Brasilia. You know what they just did in Brasilia? They bought 1,000 pigeons. They want pigeons in Brasilia. Don't you see? We hate pigeons. Do you know that a lonely little town, a very lonely little town, way down in Southern California, recently imported 400 starlings? So quit complaining, will you? I mean, quit being bugged. I mean, it's just not going to do you any good, you know? And actually, I suppose if you weren't bugged, there wouldn't be anything in your life anyway. Hi, listeners. Listener land. How are you? How am I? Can almost hear it ticking, can't you? You never can quite get away from it. Do you know that in western Pennsylvania there's a little newspaper that has a column entitled Deaths of the Day? Whoopee. I know this guy who every day picks up the newspaper to see whether he's listed. Well, you can't you push, you know, you can't push. Put it there, buddy. Hey, George, good to see you. Speaking of that, we got with us tonight the Mandarin House. And there's something I want to tell you about the Mandarin House. It's the first time I've ever seen a salesman cry. Believe it or not, I'm telling you the truth. You know, it's a funny thing when you see somebody. Do you know anything about selling? You know that a real good seller, after a while, can sell anything, and he never really relates to it, even though he seems to be totally related to it. I've known guys that sell 25 different things within 6 months, all totally unrelated, and in some cases even competing. And they can get this wild, warm, wonderful thing going around their eyes whenever they talk about any one of the things. The minute the contract's over, it's gone, you know? The image is gone. And they're out there selling something else. When a salesman gets like that, and there's no salesman like that, more like that, really, than a radio time salesman. Because in the years, you know, they will have 18,000 accounts and never even remember some of them. Most of them, as a matter of fact. Well, the other day, I took, once in a while, you know, the care and feeding of salesmen is a very difficult art, and talent has to know it. That you know, probably most of you out there think that the people in radio and television are the important people. Oh, no. There's a whole group of people in radio and television you never know about, that are so far more important than we are, who are right down here in the front lines throwing the hand grenades, you know, and getting sniped off, that they don't even talk to us, actually, unless under duress. And they have their own little club, a kind of strange group. Like one night, I want to tell you, Long John would never tell you this, but you know, Long John, probably 100 million people listen to Long John, and added to my 17, well, we have a lot of people, 17 people, not million. I know. I'm perfectly aware. I see that. You know, it's a funny thing. The other night, there's a station. Do you know that the noise level on 820, just the noise level, got a higher rating than I did? There wasn't even a station there. Got a higher rating. How are you going to deal with that? But at least my rating is honest. All three of them people are thinking. And so, yeah, there's now two of them. One just got teed off and left. Well, hey, boys. Good to see you again. So one night, John and I are at the Christmas party here, you know. They have it in the big fancy hotel. And poor John is sitting there, and I'm sitting with another one of the talent here who shall go unnamed, because that talent, that woman would be very embarrassed to know I'm talking about her. And the three of us were sitting there, you know. at this little table all by ourselves. And this is a true story. The three of us were sitting there, and the band is playing, and all these people are dancing. There's a certain kind of chipper-looking person who is never in the front lines, you know? Very, oh, hiya, buddy, type, you know? They've got their own little thing going in these organizations. Has nothing to do with the product or anything, you know? It's a little thing that's going. And so they're all dancing around and patting each other on the back, and, you know... On the back, I said. And they're going around, you know, and you know, all kinds of little things are being prepared for tonight. You can see the electric sparks are going, and there's about 500 of them there. And John and I are sitting there. I've been here since the second book of Ecclesiastes, actually. And John came shortly thereafter, actually, you know. And both of us are sitting. John says, who are all these people? Are we in the right party? He really did ask this. He said, are you sure this is the party? And I said, well, yes, there's a sign at the door. It says W-O-R. Whoopee. Merry Christmas. He said, well, who are they? I said, well, I don't know, John. And the woman who was with us, who was another one of the talents, she said, well, I recognize that one. That's from sales evaluation. I said, sales evaluation? I never heard of that department. And that little girl went past, you know, and the bells were going, and she was doing the twist, and the band was a-playing. And John and I, finally, it was funny. We came in there. You want to hear the story? We came in there at 6 o'clock, and by 6:25, John and I both left. We were totally, complete strangers. We felt like intruders. We were intruding in something. And nothing to do with us. So I thought you ought to know that this is the way it is when you're talent. Or what they call talent, you see. That's a title. That's a generic term. Talent. Yeah, it doesn't mean talent. It's just a generic term. Like they call engineers engineers. That's a generic term. You should see the engineers. They call a salesman salesman. That's a generic term. You got to see the salesman. Funny bit. And they call promotion promotion. We got an outfit here at our station that works the opposite. We've got the only promotion department who is dedicated to secrecy. That's another story. It's terrible. It's killing stories left and right. So anyway, I captured a salesman the other day, see, and it's a bushy-eyed, dewy-eyed salesman, see, and I captured him, a wonderful salesman, you know. And he's got that nervous thing that they have. And I said, well, look, why don't you come down with me? I'm going to give you lunch. And this is exactly what happened. I'm telling you a true story. I said, I'm going to give you lunch. Now, you listen. So we go downtown. We go all over. He says, where are we going? You know, nervous salesmen get very jumpy when you get more than 5 blocks away from the 50s. I mean, you know, it's like really being taken away from home base. You know, it's terrible. They get jumpy and their teeth scratch and everything. So yeah, I says, now, you just be calm. You let me handle it, will you, Bobby? So... I'm sitting there saying, I'm looking. He's all of a sudden, we're approaching the village. You know, this is anathema to salesman. Terrible, the village there. All them terrible people's there. And so we finally arrive in front of this place. He says, what is this? I said, you come on in here. Come on. So we sat down at the front table, and within 30 seconds, we have this fantastic stuff going on. And he looks at me. He says, where did you discover this joint? This is wild. And he is down on this stuff. And it's one of the very few times I've ever seen a salesman really, you know, go. He says, I'm going to bring all the guys down. It's great. There was a long, pregnant pause, and I says, this is your account. You handle this joint. You know, this is the place called Mandarin House. You know, you wrote up the contract last week. He's no kidding. He was very embarrassed. He suddenly found himself actually liking a sponsor. Well, we spent about 20 minutes there. And you know, we got out in the sun, and after we got out there, and Bob says, you know, that place is really good. He couldn't believe it. It was like a salesman who used the floating soap and found that it really floated. He had never really, and the guy who sells the dry beer, and he drank it, and he really liked the beer, you know. There's a strange, funny feeling. And he's been calling up all his friends now ever since. I thought you ought to know that the Mandarin House is a place that even Radio Time salesmen get excited about. It really is. It's the wildest, best Chinese restaurant in this entire area. It is a great one. And you'll find them on 13th Street between 6th and 7th. But more importantly, I think, for the nonce, is that they have this wild Chinese cooking school. And if you want to find out about a Chinese cooking school, if you'd like to learn how to make real Chinese food, real Chinese food, it's very easy to make, you know. The trick is in knowing how to make it. Give them a call. Just look it up in the book, Mandarin House on 13th Street. Give them a call and ask for Miss Kuo, Emily Kuo, who, by the way, is the only Harvard graduate I know who is running a restaurant and who is afraid to tell her mother that she's running a restaurant because her mother lives in Shanghai and they would be very embarrassed to find out that she's running a restaurant. Her major, by the way, is psychology. Something is very unnerving about a lady Chinese psychologist. I'll never forget, you know, that brings up something I just can't help but, you know, bring up. One of the greatest wild lines I've ever seen in my life. It's a truly wild line. And I don't even remember what picture it was. And I have to tell you beforehand that I am not a true dyed-in-the-wool W.C. Fields fan. Isn't that terrible? Isn't that awful to say that to you? I'm a Laurel and Hardy man. I really am. I'm just laying it out there honestly. And I can't say that I'm entirely a Peanuts man. That just shows you how rotten I am. And, you know, I'm trying to be as honest with you as I can. So when the time comes, I will not have so many things to have to answer for. I was honest about something, you know? Oh, boy. Anyway, excuse me, madam. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was your foot. You're creaking again. The other night, sometimes I just do this. I just go over the shrap sometimes just to sit there to hear the girdles creak. It's a nice sound. I don't know. You know, there's a kind of motherly sound about it. So, anyway, what was I telling you about? Gee. I forgot what I was telling you about. What was I telling you about? Huh? Gee, I forgot what I was telling you about. Not really. You know, it's a funny thing. I forgot about you. You know, old listener. Out there in old listener land. Oh, you want to hear about... Oh, no, you don't want to hear about that wild line. Of course not. All right. You know, I'll tell you about the wild line, see? Old W.C. is standing there, and he's in the middle of this very fancy party where everybody's got stiff white shirt fronts, you know, and they got the cutaway coats, and it's a very fancy party. And there are all kinds of very fancy, rich people there, and W.C. is a phony, as usual. And he has arrived, and he's wearing this white front, you know, and it's popped up on the back, and he's standing there, and the people are running past him, and they're dancing, and somebody's got long pearls, and they're all going past in a great crowd, and suddenly W.C. looks at him, he's watching him go past, and all of a sudden he looks right out at the camera, and he says, "Chinese people." Ah, knock it off. What do you think you are, man? You're not so funny either, boy.
Radio, your station for news.